Hi, I'm Cyndi Lauper. My scalp was covered with psoriasis, which could lead to psoriatic arthritis. But Cosentyx treats both.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 milligram dose and adults with active psoriatic arthritis 150 milligram dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for TB. Serious allergic reactions, severe skin reactions that look like eczema, and an increased risk of infections, some fatal, have occurred. Cosentyx may lower ability to fight infections, so tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if IBD symptoms develop or worsen. Learn more at Cosentyx.com or 1-844-COSENTYX.
Cosentyx works for me.
Ask your doctor about Cosentyx.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
SecondCityHockey.com.
Jonathan Toews.
Commit to us. Commit to the jersey. Commit to our people here.
Welcome back to the Second City Hockey Podcast Network. Site manager Dave Melton here. You can find me on Twitter at @SCH_DaveM. And I do not have my usual line mates with me this time because, well, it's a Friday and hockey's still very much in its off-season shutdown mode. Everyone's probably at a beach somewhere. So it seemed like a really good time for us to revive our old Friday shows here at SCH. It's where we sit down with some people in and around the hockey world, do some longer discussions about whatever comes up, I guess. For me, though, there's one person in particular that I wanted to talk to for this particular moment, and it's Sam Fells. For those of you who follow the Blackhawks anywhere near the level that we have, Sam is a guy you probably know. If you don't, he was formerly on this site, SecondCityHockey.com. Then he took his talents over to FaxesFromUncleDale.com. Which became the digital platform for the Real Fans program, as I'm quoting, Real Fans program. He used to sell outside of Blackhawks before games. He also authored Madison Street Station, which is a book that he wrote about how Blackhawks fandom has intertwined with his life over the years, and he now writes for Deadspin. For me personally, I've been reading Sam's work for a very long time, so I was absolutely thrilled that he was gracious enough to lend us some of this time and be able to sit and talk about sports with them. We did touch on the Blackhawks a good amount, but I think we also zoomed out a lot and just kind of tried to answer the question of why we care so much about sports in general. Hoping for some more discussions like this as we get a few more Friday shows in before hockey comes back to us. Got a few more guests lined up. Hopefully you'll enjoy those future shows. Hopefully you enjoyed this show, because I sure as hell know I enjoyed recording it and talking with Sam. So that's enough rambling from me. Let's get to the conversation with Sam. But Sam Fells is here. Again, Sam, thank you so much for taking the time out. And as you said, it's not really a welcome. It's more of a welcome back, since these are your old stomping grounds.
Yeah, my pleasure. It's been a long time. Jeez, it's been
8 years, I think, since we left Second City Hockey. But yeah, this is fun. It's nice to be back in some form without having to write.
Yeah, exactly. I don't miss
the windows and the tags and all that stuff that I'm sure you're probably sick of.
Yeah, I'm getting close. Okay. And I know you were writing about the Blackhawks for several years after that before you moved on to Deadspin, but do you miss writing about a team from such a hyper-focused angle?
No.
Not necessarily the Blackhawks.
No, I don't. I found it, I don't want to get all, I'm such an artist in a way, but you know, I did it for 8, 9, 10 years or so. And it gets to be repetitive, you know, even as a Hawks fan, or the schedule has the same kind of rhythm to it. Obviously it hasn't the past year and a half or so, but
right.
You know, when the West Coast trips are, you know, when these trips are, you know, when the home games are, and it gets really hard to, as I'm sure you found, to come up with something new every day about one specific team.
Mm-hmm.
And then the longer you do it, the motivation to do so just gets less and less. There are some things there's some aspects I guess I miss, you know, really getting in up to the elbow. You know, when you cover one team, you know, you develop a certain kind of following, which I'm sure you found, which mm-hmm. is cool. And, you know, now doing national stuff or more general stuff, it's a much more spread out following that's not nearly as tight knit. You know, we don't see each other at the Hawks games or whatever. So I guess I miss that part of it, but I think covering one team or one sport is great when you're starting out, or just, you know, or in the middle of a career, because it really helps focus you. But eventually, you know, it just gets hard to be original and fresh and vibrant about it, because you've done it all before. You know, you've done the story about the third line right wing for 6 or 7 times already, and it's just like, okay, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah, I can't. I don't have to write about Nikita Zadorov anymore. But by about March, I decided I didn't want to anymore.
Right.
Still had 2 months of a season to go.
Yeah, I mean, I was cheating a little bit, though. And in some ways, when the Hawks were so good, it actually was harder in some ways, because criticism is easier. And when things are going wrong, there's a lot more to talk about when they're cruising to 105 points and going a couple rounds in the playoffs, at least, you know, in the middle of February, there's nothing for you.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't miss that, but
yeah, that's fair. Yeah. It's the hockey doldrums, which happened during the regular season. And we're kind of in them right now, about a month to go before training camp starts, mm-hmm. which is why you're here. And what we're going to do for the next few weeks here, just do some more interview episodes, try and talk about some big picture stuff, maybe some more grown-up stuff, just a different angle on hockey and the Blackhawks and sports in general. And with you in particular, Sam, because this was something that's came up in your book, and it came up in a lot of, just every now and then will pop up in a recap you would write at Second City Hockey or at for the Committed Indian, wherever it was. Sorry, facts from Uncle Dale now, forgive mm-hmm. me. But it was just kind of the general idea of why do we care so much about sports in general? And then I think you tie it into the lens of just growing up, you know, your relationship to the team and the athletes changes as you get older. Like, it's, you can't have the same emotional connection when all these guys are 10 to 15, 20 years younger than you are, than you did when they were 10 years older.
Let's not make it worse than it is, but yes.
Okay. But just your overall point being, I guess, what, as a kind of a general open-ended thing, and not specifically to the Blackhawks, but more just sports in general, because there's things related to the Blackhawks that will come in here that are part of the picture and part of the problem, I guess. But what is it that keeps you caring about sports and keeps you turning on the TV to watch them instead of watching a movie or a show or whatever, what have you?
You mean other than the paycheck now?
Well, that there's that too. that factors in for sure.
That's a question I find myself asking myself more and more. But as I get older, you know, I see more and more of a connection between sports and theater or TV and the arts. I think there's a lot of things that I didn't realize that touch the same nerves, you know, in all facets of entertainment. It's also why I've, as you know, because you follow me on Twitter, I'm really into wrestling. It's kind of the same mm-hmm. thing. But I think with the thing about sports is that it still, at least sometimes, feels so much more communal. It feels like you're part of something. It's theater that you get to live in. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously I'm not the Hawks fan I was. I've abandoned the Cubs for different reasons for both teams. I don't think my problem isn't with Cubs fans. At least no more than normal. You know, but as you know, I'm still a big Liverpool fan. Mm-hmm. And you know, I don't I'm not a huge NFL fan, but the Bears will always be a part of me, no matter how much I try and run from that.
Right.
And there's still that communal feeling to it. You know, when it comes to Liverpool, like, okay, it's been, you know, pandemic aside, you know, there's still a feeling about going to the bar or the pub and being surrounded by other Liverpool supporters that you don't get anywhere else. And if you're a big Hawks fan, there's still that feeling of going to the Hawks game and being surrounded by other Hawks fans. You're part of something. Same with, you know, for whoever's left being a Cubs fan. I don't know who is, but I'm sure White Sox fans feel that way.
We're trying to
right now. Yeah. Because, you know, and the White Sox have so much coming together right now. You know, so I think it's still like, I still watch sports, not just because it's my job, but to be entertained. I mean, at the end of the day, it's still, you turn it on for the same reason you turn on your favorite show, your favorite movie. You want to be entertained. You want to spend an hour or two or three thinking about something else, especially these days. You know, in sports, it's just a different nerve that you're hitting within the same desire that, you know, it's still theater. I mean, if I'm watching a game that I'm not emotionally involved in, say, you know, watching the Lightning, you know, the Stanley Cup final, you know, I don't really care what happens, but I'm watching to be entertained. It's the same reason I would, you know, go to a play or go to a movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also witnessing people the secondhand who are having that experience, that communal experience. And you can't tell me that the crowd in the arena and knowing, and, you know, if you follow along Twitter, people at home, that's a huge difference. That makes the theater you're watching different. You know, we all watch sports through the pandemic and with canned noise or no noise at all. And we saw the empty seats and we know that it's just not the same.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
It is not the same experience. And you could try and fool yourself like, well, I'm still hearing the same stuff because, you know, they had the recordings of the crowd or whatever, but you know that it's not. And
like,
and
it almost made it worse because, like, it did make it another worse. Reminder.
Right. It did make it worse. I almost would have rather just watched with the silence.
Uh-huh.
And admit, you know, this is where we're at. But, you know, that's another discussion. So I think that's why, you know, it's still, you know, you put a good baseball, good soccer game, good hockey game in front of me, you know, it's still better than 95% of the television I'd be watching.
That's
you can get lost in it and you can still see things that, you know, you just don't see every day, and you feel things you don't feel every day, even when it's not your team. You know, when you're watching a big, you know, as much as I try and get away, like, you know, a good playoff hockey game with, you know, especially like, you know, good crowd, the Islanders or the Lightning or whatever, you know, Canadian market, you know, it's close game in the third and everyone's going nuts like that. That causes a rush or a feeling within you that isn't matched by anything else. And, you know, I go to movies, I go to the theater to feel something, or I watch wrestling to feel something. I watch TV shows to feel something, whatever that is. If it's comedy, I want to laugh, or if it's drama and I want to be lifted out of my seat. Sports is the same thing. I think we all watch to feel something, whether that's, you know, the joy of your team winning or even the misery of them losing, which we get a lot of around here.
Yeah.
I think at the end of the day, you're still just looking to feel something. And I won't ever be able to, I don't think I'd ever be able to go without it.
Yeah.
You know, it's been such a part of my life for so long. I wouldn't know what to do with all that time, honestly. And in during, you know, when the sports were shut down, I was watching a lot of TV. I enjoyed that. I tried to enjoy the break of it, but I could constantly feel myself searching for something. It was like something's off here. What am I missing?
Uh-huh.
And it's that, you know, it's that rush. It's the crash. It's the lift off your couch. Even, you know, and we didn't get it to the full extent during the pandemic with, you know, the empty stadium sports, but at least we got a facsimile of it.
Right.
It was better than nothing, but it wasn't the same. And I think that's what keeps me tuning in and keeps me wanting to write about it. And, you know, as you're probably learning or have learned, that you have to cover so much of this shit.
Right.
And you know, and especially now, you know, the past year and a half too, and national stuff with Deadspin, there's a lot more shit.
Oh yeah. Like writing about one team seems challenging enough because, like, you talked about generating content It's like the opposite ends of the spectrum, but it feels like the same problem where either you have one team to write about and there's, and you just can't like muster and you can't write, you've wrung the sponge dry. There's nothing else left, or the sponge is so big, I don't even know where to start squeezing when you're writing about national sports.
And you start squeezing and it's just, you know, it's a lot of bullshit. You know, it's a lot of owners and greed and legal stuff, and you know you have to do it. It's part of the thing. You want to paint the whole picture, but then you have to ask yourself, okay, well, what keeps me waiting through all this shit? You know, because otherwise I should just go do something that will occasionally make me happy. But I try and check myself. I don't know if I've been doing a good job of it lately, you know, to make sure that you watch and write about the stuff that does that you do find fun, that does make you happy.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be worth it, right?
Yeah, not
got to be worth it.
Obligated to write or to watch,
right? So, and I still feel like it's worth it. I mean, I think there are moments, you know, that I still see them. You know, whether it was Liverpool Chelsea on Saturday, which was a great game.
Yes, it was.
You know, just last night I was watching the A's and Yankees, which was a good game. And then I watched the Portland Timbers and Seattle Sounders, that rivalry. Yes, people, I do have a girlfriend. Don't worry. You know, but like those were all good stuff. I mean, like there was a couple of great goals, and it's like, oh, okay. You know, yeah. I still get a charge from that, so it is still worth it.
And I think the biggest thing for me that you touched on there was the communal aspect of it, and like there is, and I think that's where Twitter is kind of fun, to where like if the Hawks play a random Tuesday night game or just whatever game you're watching. You can, it's like watching with a virtual sports bar. Like you can find people, and there's an element of crowd control, so you don't get as many strangers yelling awful things at you.
Right. Still fuck with 319 and such. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I still think Twitter's great for that. I think during a big sporting event, it's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. I know there's a lot that comes with it. My Twitter experience is not nearly as bad as other people's. And I sometimes wonder how it can get so bad for some people. Although my Facebook experience isn't that bad because I don't have any weird relatives. But
congratulations.
Yeah, I know. I must be the lucky one. So I think Twitter's great for that. But yeah, it's that communal. I mean, well, the last year I was doing Hawks games, they were terrible. You probably remember the game. It was a Saturday night in LA. Crawford got hurt like in the first period. They had to check him for a concussion. It was Crawford's last year. And I remember tweeting out like, I know there is at least like five freaks out here who have nothing else to do but watch the Hawks on a Saturday night. Well, I'm here with you. and you know, it was like, it was just like being back, God, 20 years ago or whatever it was, 15 mm-hmm. years ago, where you're the three weirdos watching the Hawks in the bar, because no bar had the Hawks game on. Who the fuck cared? You know, like no one.
Yeah. And half of the games weren't even on TV.
And half the games weren't even on. So it arouses that feeling. So there is what sports have that no one else has, is that shared live communal experience. Now there are plenty of people who watch, you know, we're getting that more and more. Like you watch the last episode of Game of Thrones and everyone's tweeting about it at the same time, mm-hmm. and you're talking about it afterwards, but it's not quite the same.
Yeah. Because I think it's like the randomness of sports. Like I know television shows, like you don't know what's coming, but it feels like sports can be more random. There's a higher propensity for things that are just completely off the wall to happen that you did not expect to happen.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And this is where I can't remember where I heard someone talking about this, so I apologize for not being able to give proper credit here, but it was the idea of being a sports fan. Is it more about the celebrating the wins or commiserating for the losses? And is that something that's ever come to your mind about what is, I don't know if it's,
I mean, it's both.
Okay.
You can't have one without the other. I don't think.
Are you sure? Like, because it seems like we never, not for the Hawks at least, but so many other teams, it's more the losing than the winning.
Well, that's just because there's more of it.
Yeah.
Well, true. Yeah. I mean, I think they go hand in hand. I think the one is sweeter because of the other, and you know, the commiserate about the losing hurts more because you know what the winning feels like. But you know, life, you can't go through life without feeling pain. I mean, that's part of life as much as everything else. I'm not saying you should actively seek it out or anything, but you know, you have to embrace it. It's part of it. So yeah, the commiserating about the losses, the celebrate, I mean, it's all part of it. And I feel like you know, that it's the only thing that makes sports unique is that it makes you feel those things so violently at times. And maybe it shouldn't, but I don't know. You've read enough, you've been reading me a long time, you know, how pissed off I get when people say sports don't matter. I don't buy into that at all, because I've seen people cry over TV shows. You know, I've seen, I've cried at the movie theater. We're all just want catharsis. We want to feel something. So, and there are way more stories of sports teams bringing friends together, families together, than there are of movies doing so or theater doing so. That doesn't mean it doesn't happen, but not on the same scale. Where you work now, SCH, where we started, I didn't know Killian or McClure from a hole in the ground before we started that blog together. We were email friends, not even internet friends. And now, you know, I've stood in Killian's wedding. That's just one example. So, that's why we do it. Yeah. But it's all about the commiserate. I mean, the commiserate and the losses, you just have more experience. Right. Especially if you're in Chicago and like we are, you know, it's just, it's part of it. But, you know, that's what makes the rare nights you're not doing that so much more special, and the ones you remember forever. Now I'm the weirdo who remembers all the nights commiserating the losses too. But,
yeah. Yeah.
They're just as vivid and just as important of a memory.
Yeah, and it also seems like, speaking of like communal aspects, the communal aspect of sports, that there are increasingly fewer things that happen in our culture, in our country, and I can't speak for other cultures because I've never lived in any other ones.
Right.
But, you know, with everything so partisan and polarizing and whatever word you want to throw in here, there's a lot more divisions than, there's a lot more things that seem to divide than bring together, and that's where I worry. That's one thing that worries me, like down the road, is if we lose that with sports too somehow. And I don't know. I don't know if that's possible, but
I've thought about that, and I wonder too. But you know, I mean, I've seen this town, and this only happens with the Bears, and it kind of happened with the Hawks, but not nearly to the scale. But it really only happens with the Bears. And when the Bears are good, I have nothing in common with anyone who lives on the South Side. I'll be honest with you. Like we don't agree on bands. We don't agree on beer, food, whatever, you know, but that doesn't mean we're not both wearing our Bears hat, winter hats, you know, and put on our jersey on Sunday. And that is something we could talk. I'll tell you a story. I went out to the Bears Broncos game in 2019 in Denver, because one of my best friends from college lives in Denver, so I went to visit her and go to the game.
Oh yeah, I was at that too. I had a group. We have a group of friends that have gone to see the Bears on the road every year.
Since, nice.
Speaking of communal aspects,
communal experiences, yeah, so.
We're spread across the country, but we all get together for this one weekend just about every year.
So the Thursday night before the game, so this is 4 days before the game in Denver. My friend and I just go to some dive bar near her house just to have a couple beers, and I'm you know, we're sitting at the bar and I'm looking at her and she's looking at me, and some guy gets up to the bar behind me. I don't see him. I just know he's back there. And all I hear is, yeah, let me get a Jack and Coke, and don't put too much ice in there, all right? I want a little ice. And I immediately know where this guy's from, and I know exactly why he's here. And I can turn around, and I'm like, you're here for the game Sunday. He's like, you're damn right I'm here for the game Sunday. I'm like, that's what I'm doing out here. And I, you know, this guy probably is from, I don't even know where. You know, if I told him where I was from, he'd probably walk away. But like, we could spend 2 minutes talking about how excited we were for the game, how we thought, you know, it was going to go, how the season would play out. And that's all it had to be. And I don't know what else could replace that. And we do get more divided. It feels fucking hopeless at times. I don't know, whatever I would share a moment like that with someone from Alabama or something, but I don't have to. I don't live in Alabama, you know? So I feel like that kind of moment will never go away. Even if it's just a couple minutes, that's all we needed. So I've thought about that too. And I think you're right to wonder, but I don't know. It'll be different, but I don't know that it would go away.
I think that's such an open-ended thing that there's, I mean, I wonder how, I feel like the next 5 years could be interesting just because with the pandemic taking away sports for so long, I thought there might be some sort of cathartic, oh, like we really like this, so maybe let's stop, you know, being assholes to each other and enjoy it. But maybe that's a little too idealistic.
I mean, I was hoping for the same thing too. You would think this kind of event, which is not unprecedented but certainly rare, you know, would cause a lot of us, and I think it actually has caused more of us than we read about to really like, okay, let's peel back some things and try and find what's important. The problem is that the people who get covered are the ones who yell the loudest, who make it seem like things might be a little worse than they are. That doesn't mean things aren't bad. But I don't know. It's just such a loud minority. It's hard to gauge, you know? But I don't, you know, when I'm out in the street here in Chicago, now, you know, Chicago is a very neighborhood by neighborhood city. I don't feel that, you know, and I go places. I don't feel that. So, you know, you may be proven right. It just may take longer than you'd hoped.
Yeah, most of my like experiences, I'm down in the suburbs in Northwest Indiana and from covering high school sports. Mm-hmm. And like somehow we got through an entire school's year's worth of sports without a widespread shutdown somehow. And they're starting up again. Yeah.
Right.
They're starting up again, fingers crossed. I mean, there were plenty of teams that had their 2-3 week shutdown, some of them in the postseason or near the postseason.
Right.
So but even now here, like if you go to the grocery store, the Bears play at 3, you go to the grocery store at 12, it's all Bears jerseys, especially right. If the Bears are good.
Right, which and I think, know, they probably won't be, but you know, that's another discussion for another time.
Like I think it was right after the Bears did that QB1 tweet with Andy Dalton. I think Jason Goff tweeted something along the lines of, "This is the biggest gang that we all belong to, and they suck all the time."
Yep. Yeah. Well, Jason has a way of cutting right to the point. So
he does. So kind of shifting gears, and this is something you mentioned at some point that I remember I wanted to come back to it.
No problem.
It's the uglier side of sports we'll come back to the Hawks in a bit, but just the money, essentially the greed, the word that I've heard in two or three other like documentaries and things I've watched recently is corporate, that professional sports feels so corporate now. And it's like, it's getting to a degree that's like, it feels like there's elements of it sucking the soul out of sports and killing the spirit, like the communal spirit and a lot of the other stuff that we talk about, that's like the stuff that people romanticize about sports. I'm trying to think of exactly what the question is, but I guess just how do you see this affecting sports, I guess is the word.
Well, that's a really great way of putting it. And it already has, you know, affected sports in a lot of ways, and probably more ways to come. And it is a worry. And you know, I would say baseball is the leader in my mind,
right?
Where you can see how it's not, you know, it's not just me, it's not just the Cubs. You can see how it's affected, you know, sport wide, and no one seems to be paying attention who can do anything about it. I mean, maybe they're paying attention, they just don't care. So it is a worry. I don't know. You know, I feel like at some point, though, if it's corporate, like you say, there comes a reckoning where the way it's being run drives fans away enough that their bottom line is affected and they have to make changes just to keep the bottom line. They have to make, you know, the changes for corporate reasons, but they end up benefiting fans. Now, I don't know how far that is off in the distance. It could be well after I'm dead. But yeah, I mean, it's an absolute worry. You know, some other things I feel like are just a different labeling. You know, you mentioned the Super League in soccer at the top, mm-hmm. and that's certainly worrisome. And the amount of power that, you know, certain power and money that, you know, a few clubs have across Europe that everyone else doesn't. But, you know, European soccer's always had kind of that sort of power structure. There's always been the big teams and the little teams. You know, we change the labels, maybe the differences are bigger, but it's always kind of been like that. You know, baseball's always had the Yankees or the Dodgers, you know, the Cardinals used to be that. They're not anymore, thank God. But, you know, so I feel like, you know, it always survives. And as we said earlier, it does get corporate, and so much surrounding it, it feels like it's closing in on the stuff you love, you know, which is actually the actual game. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that there's anything they can do that'll rob you of the emotion of seeing a walk-off home run, or, you know, seeing your favorite pitcher throw 7 shutout innings, you know, or, you know, the Hawks scoring an overtime playoff goal. Maybe I'm being pie-eyed like you were earlier, but there's something there that they can't touch. There's something raw there that you can't commercialize. Now you can make it an NFT and put it on your web page and your Twitter, you know, and package all that, those moments in a way. But at the base of it, I still feel like that is still pretty pure. And what I'll say, you know, I've been to Wrigley once this year and I won't go back for a long time, but you know, I always think about this. I was there the night Jason Hayward hit a walk-off grand slam against the Phillies, which didn't end up mattering, but still a great moment. And I think about, you know, the sound of that ball hitting his bat and the way, you know, when you're at a baseball game, when loud contact is made, there's a brief second of silence.
Yeah.
You know, there's like a hush real
like
quick.
Like a hush or almost a gasp. Yeah.
And you know what? That's how has sounded at that very spot for 105 years now. That's how it's always sounded at Wrigley Field, that moment. And that's the moment you go for. So no matter how things get on the outside, and at Wrigley Field, they've gotten pretty horrific on the outside. You know, that moment is still there. And it's the same moment that someone experienced in 1956 and 1971 or whatever year you want to talk about. That still sounds the same. And, you know, it still sounds the same just across the street at Comiskey. You know, it's maybe not the same building, but it's the same sound. And I feel like that can't really be touched. That'll always still be there for whoever wants it. It's just, can you wade through all the stuff?
Yeah.
You have to get to it. And for more and more people, I think the answer might be no. And that is a problem. But if you can, the actual core is still there.
Mm-hmm. And I was, you answered the follow-up I was going to ask you is about like wading through all the other stuff, but, and I guess the other side of it, like there's I've talked to people like about this, and like the suggestion that I've had from other people is like, if you go to like minor league baseball or minor league hockey, and it's not as corporate, there's not as much money involved, so it has a little bit more of that pure feel. And I, again, me being around high school sports for work, like I get that too. But the sound, like that's for example, like just the sound you mentioned of a professional baseball player hitting a home run sounds different than when a high school kid does it, or the way an NBA player is going to dunk is going to be different than the way a high school kid does it. So no disrespect to any of those other athletes, but it's not the same. And that's what sucks is that like, they're the only ones with that product.
Right.
And I need that. Well,
I need that.
I really
product,
want
right.
that product. So.
Well, but at the same time, you cover high school sports. You know, you're on a nightly basis. You're covering kids who are just there to play. Now, some of them, you know, maybe aspiring for scholarships or whatever else. But you know, they're there because they genuinely love to play. And it's the same thing on the professional level. You know, we get caught up in these guys. Oh, these guys make so much money or whatever. These guys, for the most part, still love being out there. They still want to compete. It's the same emotion as it was for them in high school. You witness it on both levels. And that's, I don't think that's another thing that like as corporate as everything around it gets, I'm not sure that can be touched. Now there's, you know, you can have the nuanced discussion there for all night. And we're not going to do that, but no. You know, I think you can still see that in the position you're in because you're in the high school gym, but then, you know, or the high school field, but then, hey, maybe a few nights later, you're out with your buddies at Comiskey. But, you know, on the field, it's still kind of the same. They're there for the same reason. It's not scholarships and to beat, you know, the school down the street anymore. It's for bigger goals, but it's the same family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a different branch of the same tree, mm-hmm. I guess.
This is advertiser content brought to you by Frito-Lay.
Hello, I'm Chip Murphy, here to get you ready for the big tournament. Tonight we break down who will be cutting. Cut! What are you two doing?
Sorry, Chip. Prez here got his feathers ruffled when I told him Ruffles has zero chance of winning the title.
And I was letting Dip know that she is not taking into account Ruffles' iconic ridges.
Guys, it's March. We have to start talking about the tournament.
We are. It is the 2023 Frito-Lay Snack-It.
We're talking about big-time matchups between Cheetos, Smartfood, Lay's, Sun Chips, and more.
Just head to the Frito-Lay Snack Bracket and vote for your favorite chip, pretzel, or dip for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks.
This sounds great. Keep up the good work.
Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends 4/3/2023. Void where prohibited. Here's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
So I guess this is where we'll start wading through some of the shit.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
That's fun.
I mean, with it, like, because it's becoming, it seems like the current Blackhawks scandal with the sexual assault allegations from 2010. I don't have a basis for this. Like, I don't know if they're just becoming more prevalent now. I mean, obviously, like, the sexual assault discussion and conversation has completely changed in 5 years. But just the idea of teams having things like that, things like this that they swept, may have been able to sweep under the rug permanently in the 70s, 80s, 90s, what have you, that maybe these things come to light more now because there's more investigations. Whatever the cause is, it seems like these scandals come out more now. And I guess I don't know how, like, it's just there's that awkward feeling of, I don't know how you, it's like kind of the thing I've heard you discuss of separating the art from the artist. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's kind of the same idea, but it's like, I mean, the majority of the players on the ice, as far as we know, weren't involved. I know there's been allegations that there were players heckling the victim. And so I can't, but, like, you know, Philip Kurashev wasn't on that team. Dominic Kubalik wasn't on that team. So right. Alex DeBrincat wasn't on that team. So it's like, I don't know where to, it's so hard to find the gray area to navigate in the middle there. And I guess what's that process been like for you over the last few months?
Not easy. And I think everyone has to answer that for themselves. And I wouldn't propose to tell anyone what they should do or how they should feel totally. I do get, you know, when my podcast buddies tell me what their parents have to say, you know, that does make me angry, but, like, they come from a different perspective. I'm working on it. You know, it's a goal. Yeah. Let's put it that way. You know, I think everyone has to come up with that answer themselves. I as for why we hear more about this, you know, there's just so many more people watching as far as reporters. Now, I pitch about the media a lot, but, you know, there are people like you and me, bloggers and reporters everywhere for websites, for different outlets. So more people are looking for stuff. So this stuff just gets out more quickly than it does, which is a good thing. You know, but as far as how it makes me, it's hard. It is hard because, as you say, you know, most of this Hawks roster had nothing to do with this.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the Hawks roster was in high school, you know, if not younger.
Yeah, if that, yeah.
If that. So, you know, you certainly don't want to take it out on them. But it is hard because the front office, the hierarchy is still there. And it is hard to reconcile, you know, compensating that front office with your money. I mean, I canceled my season tickets. It was too much for me because it just felt like, well, even if the players have nothing to do with it, I can't support, you know, this is the last straw for me. I can't financially support an organization that might have done this. We still don't know. And we'll probably never know what exactly happened, whether they helped get this guy another job or not, or whatever. But I feel like I can't blame someone who just really loves going to the Hawks. You know, their fucking job sucks or their kids are goddamn annoying or just like, you know what? I need a night or two a week just to go sit and have a few beers and watch hockey. You know what? I can't say that they're wrong. It would be nice, I guess, if everyone felt that way, because that's how you get real changes. But, man, you know what? Life is hard. Being an adult is hard. And I'm not even living an adult life that's as nearly as hard as some other people's.
Right.
So if you need, you know, that break where you're just watching hockey with a friend or your son or your brother or whatever, sister, mom, whatever. Hey, I get it. You know, I think for me, it's another case. And I went through this in 2015 with Patrick Kane, where that feeling of being part of something gets fissured because I feel one way and so much of the group feels another, and it doesn't feel like we're in the same group anymore. And that's sort of what I've been going through with the Hawks for the past few years, is that I don't, you know, I started that stupid fucking program and that stupid fucking blog because I felt part of being a Hawks fan, that we were a group together. It was a strange little cult that grew to be so much more, and that was fine. That was great. And I don't feel that way anymore. I just feel like, as real life has crept in, and we can't ignore that, I have less and less common with more and more Hawks fans. That the people I have stuff in common with were a small group within that larger group. That makes it harder. You know, it makes it more uncomfortable to sit in the United Center when you feel like you're surrounded by people who you just don't think you understand and they don't understand you. So, you know, that's where I'm at. We'll see how it all plays out, but you know, it is harder. And I, you know, I try and forgo like my favorite musicians, Transgressions and Crimes of the Past. Like, well, you know, that was 1975 or whatever, but going forward, I do feel like their sports fans should be more aware of the whole picture of what it really is going on. Who is this person? Because we're going to know anyway. And, you know, like if you were a Canes fan, seeing them sign Tony D'Angelo, I don't think you can shut that out. You know, so now you can go back to Hartford Whaler histories and they probably had plenty of pieces of shit on the Hartford Whalers.
Right.
Or previous iterations of the Canes, but like that's the past. We can't do anything about that. But we can do something about the now and what comes next. And, you know, if we want to see the changes that we do, you know, we have to be more aware and we have to speak with the only weapon we have, which is our money. It's the only thing we care about.
Right.
You know, that's how I feel. But again, like I said, I can't begrudge someone who just wants to go watch a hockey game.
Yeah.
I get it. I understand. That's where I'm at. So, you know, it's a long way around back to where I started. I think it's just something that comes down to how that individual feels and what they enjoy and what they can live with and what matters to them. And I can't make people care about stuff they don't care about. I want to, and I'll try still, right. But at the end of the day, you can't, you know, they have to get there themselves.
And it comes also back to that, the communal experience we were talking about earlier, that you might be sitting next to this person at the Hawks game and maybe the Hawks score the winner in overtime and that person turns to high five you and you guys high five, and not like that would be the only interaction you guys could ever have that would potentially be positive.
Right. But maybe, I mean, I had my season tickets for, 11 years, or I guess with the pandemic, it only worked out to 10. But,
who's
you know, I had the season tickets next to the same people for a good chunk of that. And, like, I know that outside the United Center, I wouldn't even want to hang out with these people. One of them was, like, deeply religious, and, like, homeschooled their kids, you know. And there was a group next on my right, you know, and like they were fun guys to talk to at a hockey game. But man, if I saw them at a bar, I'd run the other way. But, you know, in that setting, you know, we're all friends. It's, you know, we're all there for the same purpose and to feel the same things. And I can't get too mad at people who just want to keep that, right. You know, that can't, their feeling of that, it can't, is less able to be penetrated than mine is. I can't get too angry at that. I get a little angry and I'm working on it, but I get it.
So we talked earlier a little bit about having like the way you develop emotional attachments to players is obviously different now than it was when you were a kid, but I imagine it still has to happen somewhat. Like, I'm sure I'm not the only person that's somewhat emotionally invested in Justin Fields right now. I'm sure.
No.
But, I mean, even going like to the Blackhawks, like I've developed quite a fondness for Alex DeBrincat, mainly because we're probably the same height, unfortunately, and neither one of us is happy about it.
But, right.
I guess for you, like knowing, like you learned of all these past transgressions of guys that may have happened 5-10 years, you know, while you were a fan of theirs, and you learn about them later. Like, does it make it difficult, or does it at all change how that emotional investment? To our emotional attachment to athletes happens now than it might have happened, you know, 5-10 years ago.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm certainly a little more guarded, but you know, you mentioned Alex DeBrincat, and is weird and really bad and unenjoyable at parts as this Hawks season was. Like, watching him develop into a complete player this past season was probably the most enjoyable part of watching the Hawks this year. And I still feel that. You know, even though he's, Jesus Christ, like 15 years younger than me, more, 16. You know, I was graduating high school when he was still in the crib. Like, let's just put it that way. But like, I still feel that. Like, it's still fun for me to watch these players on the field or on the ice develop, turn into something, surprise me in a way. There's just less, you know, worship about
okay
it. You know, like I realize what the relationship is. I enjoy their art, And that's, and I try not to think about it too much more. You know, I mean, my favorite player of all time was Jeremy Roenick. Now he has proven to be the largest butthead, you know, around, you know, in the sport, but there's the child within me will always feel that way about Jeremy Roenick, but there's none of that now. He's not, none of these guys are larger than life characters to me. Because yeah, I'm older and I know what's going on. They're so much younger and I'm not trying to, I think the problem is I'm not trying to live through them anymore. I mean, let's be honest, when you're, you know, grade school, even high school, college, maybe just out of college, you're still kind of trying to live through these guys.
Oh yeah.
You want some of that glow. Mm-hmm. That goes away. But you still appreciate what they mean to you as far as what they can do, how they affect your team, which affects your emotions, which affects your day. So you cut out some of the, you know, the glow and the aura, the extraneous stuff, but you still feel about them as players the same way you did when you were 12. It's just, it doesn't come with so much worship. It doesn't come with so much projection, I guess. You know, I'm not looking at them hoping to be them. I mean, even when, you know, I mean, come on, we still, you know, I still think I might get drafted by the Cubs and play second one day, but you never let that go. If you let that go, you die.
Right.
But it's not the same. You know, you're not, even when you're 25, you know, the Hawks won their first cup when I was 28. Even at that age, you're still kind of trying to position yourself next to it in any way you can to sort of feel a part of it or whatever. And that goes away. But when it does, you don't miss it. You just realize it for what it is, and you can still enjoy a great deal from it.
I think I have I don't know when it's going to happen. Taves and Kane are each about a year younger than me. So okay. I feel like as long as they're still playing, I'm okay.
Right, right, yeah. I mean, I see people's grandkids in leagues now, you know. Oh, I remember. I mean, I actually saw that guy's grandfather play, you know. I mean, I was like six, but so yeah, it takes some getting used to. I sort of wonder what I will, you know, Duncan Keith's gone now. I mean, he's still playing, but he's not here. You know, when Taves and Kane retire, mostly when they retire, you know, what will I feel? Because that is the last connection to when I was that age. And that will be very weird. But, you know, gone through with other teams, there's no Cubs from when I was 25, 26. You know, there's no, certainly no Bears, no NFL career lasts that long.
No.
So, you know, it's an adjustment, especially with Taves Kane, because obviously I was so involved with the Hawks back then. But it's a little weird, but, you know, it passes a little quicker than you think.
So you weren't personally offended when Lucas Reichel was wearing number 27 at whatever event?
Oh, I got over that with Johnny Oduya. I mean, I watched Todd Simpson wear that fucking number, for Christ's sake, you know? So
I tweeted, like, it was noticeable. Like, I don't think Reichel ever had a number, and I said that, oh, he's wearing Boquist number 27. And I got, like, immediately three or four people, that's Roenick's number. Like, oh, right. Sorry, guys. Like, I went to my first Hawks game the year after he left. So,
right.
I apologize. So,
like, yeah, I mean,
I'm aware. I know everything. I played the shit out of NHL 94.
I know the history, but I just didn't experience it, which is very different. So, I get it. I mean, that's weird to hear, but yeah, I mean, it totally makes sense, you know?
So the last thing I want to ask you related to the Blackhawks, and this is kind of tied in like the whole corporate feel to them and the way that it just everything, I know obviously they've fucked it up pretty well, but like their image, they try to be so polished. Mm-hmm. If you try to start your fan program now, do you think they'd let you? Because I feel like the way they try, they're so protective of their image now, like they might not.
That's a really good question. I think they would, because just the look of not letting me would be bad. Also, I mean, you know, I was such a, if you started one now, it'd be the same as when I started one then. It's such a speck on their whole picture that why even take the time?
Right.
Maybe they would, because the rules, you know, with their atrium now, you know, just east of the arena, you know, that's a whole thing. I don't know if the rules would be different. But that's a good question. I don't know. I feel like they still would, but it wouldn't be as easy. I bet there'd be a little more interaction, because when I started, I didn't hear anything from the Hawks. Like, you know, I get occasionally a bored security guard, but it's not like, it's not like they contacted me or we had any interaction. They certainly weren't going to give us press passes or anything. I know they knew of us, but like, it was not like a, we'll let them go. You know, they just didn't care. Although I know some of them in the front office read it. It'd still be so weird. I mean, like who actually prints out a publication now? Like they,
right?
They'd be even more confused than the people were in 2008. So I don't know. I guess they'd let me start, and then it would depend on what I was writing and how you'd have to be more careful. I probably couldn't do or say some of the things I did back then. Because it'll spread. I mean, Twitter wasn't really a thing when I started. But you know, if you started it now and you had something that was really wild and really out there, which I did, someone would tweet a picture of it. Yeah. It might go viral, you know, and then where are you at? You know, and that can be a good or bad thing. So I'd be curious. I feel like they'd let me start, but you have to walk that beam a little more carefully than I did. That's
yeah.
They'd
make you sell. You wouldn't be able to sell it on their property anymore. you'd be in the
yeah.
Middle.
I mean, I was never technically on their property, so that's what bailed me out. I don't know if the rules have changed since they've done all that construction. I'd be curious, I guess. But yeah, that was the get out. The couple times they threatened the security threatened to have me arrested, as I wasn't technically doing anything illegal. So there's no way they could actually stop you. I mean, they could make your life hell if they wanted to. So I guess it's how determined you were to do it.
So the other big thing I would love to talk to you about is just soccer in general, because I know you mentioned Liverpool and Chelsea off the top. And I learned the word argy-bargy this weekend. I did not know that was a thing. And I think they said it at least 15 times during the course of that game and in the post game. Great word, by the way.
Great, okay. Yeah. Try and adopt as much of the British terminology as you can.
That's good stuff. When the Premier League came to America on NBC Sports, like 5-10 years ago, whenever that was, like, I've always been tangent. Like, I was part of the generation, and like, at least in the suburbs, everybody played soccer as a kid up until the age of like 10 or 11. And then you picked your sport. But so like, I've always had a passing interest in soccer. And then when it came to America, I'm like, all right, like, it's time. And for some reason I picked Southampton, which is your team's youth academy.
It's true. Off the beaten path, at least.
Yeah, I'm blaming my Catholic guilt for it, because it was when I found out the team plays at St. Mary's Stadium, and that is the name of the Catholic grade school I attended for.
That makes total sense. They used to come onto the field to trample on their foot by Led Zeppelin, too. I mean, you can't beat that. So,
was that when they played at the Dell?
That was when they played at the Dell. I think they might have changed it when they moved into the new stadium, but I know they used to. So, you know, that's a perfectly cromulent team to pick.
And when I was at a Blues game, I watched the Hawks play in St. Louis one time, and they were singing "When the Blues Go Marching In." I'm like, this is not your song. But then I also learned that every Premier League team
has that song.
Sing that exact song. So whatever. But it kind of ties in with that. Like I get every year that goes by, I get deeper and deeper into it. And I know this happens in MLS stadiums now, where there's fans singing and chanting, and it just sounds so cool. Like, I watched that Seattle-Portland game on Sunday night as well, and the atmosphere in all of those matches is incredible. And every time I watch that, it's different in Europe. It's like another level in Europe. And every time I watch them play, I'm like, they seem to be having so much more fun. And why don't we do it that way? Why didn't we inherit that from England when we broke away?
Right. It's funny, after I finished my first book, this was an idea I was kicking around for a second book, is in that, why is American fan culture so different from South American, European, Australian? I didn't get around to it. I still might one day. But it's a subject like you that fascinates me. Why is the atmosphere at our sporting events so canned?
Yes.
So artificial. And why is it so natural everywhere else in the world? I'm curious, and I don't have an answer for you. That's what the book would be about. So maybe one day we'll get to the bottom of it. But that's something I've been wondering about for 30 years now, 25 years now. It is so strange.
Because you spent time, were you in Liverpool? And like, I know
I lived in Leeds. My junior year abroad was in Leeds, which is about 2 hours by train from Liverpool in the north.
But like, because that's
I've been there, yeah.
Yeah, like COVID willing, I was hoping to go see some Premier League games next in the spring, but we'll see how that goes.
We'll see how that goes. I mean, it's always next season, and God, they do like the official tours now, right? You just sign up and you.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's like packages and stuff. I don't know if Southampton's on them, but you can probably work it.
Yeah, they may not have. Maybe they should start it because they might need the money for it.
Right. I hope you can make it in the spring. I hope the gods will allow. But
I mean, but is there? I guess, and that's like again, like touching on the corporate thing. Like, it's maybe with some of the top teams, like the Man United, Man City, and maybe even Liverpool a little bit. There's like the corporate tentacles might be creeping in, but like you said, the atmosphere at those matches just feels so natural. Mm-hmm. And like,
it is having been to several Premier League games. It is. And it's just a different type of noise, really. You know, you see it in flashes here and there for big games where the crowd doesn't need to be prodded and it's a natural thing, but it's only in moments. I wish I had an answer for you. I just don't.
Okay.
Well, yeah, but it feels like it's always been that way. I don't know that, you know, American sports, you know, baseball games or hockey games were that different in the 70s or 80s. I mean, yeah, I wax lyrical about the old Chicago Stadium and it was loud, but it wasn't constantly like that. You know, it was loud in the big moments or when, you know, there was momentum, you know, in the third period or whatever, or the Hawks scored two quick goals or whatever. It was loud like that, but it, you know, that doesn't mean it compared to what you'd find in Manchester or North London or whatever. You know, it's just, it feels like it's always been like that. And I wish I could tell you, but it is different. And it is obviously much more, you know, artificial and canned. Now there's something at every stoppage. There's a song, there's a promotion, there's flashing lights, and it's a lot. It's a lot to put up with, but they must have some research that that's what people want, you know? And I mean, I get it. If you're a kid, it must sound like the greatest thing on earth. That's who you want to bring back, right? That's the ones you gotta, you gotta infect. So they make their parents bring them back and then you've got them for life. So maybe that's it, but yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. And like the way, it seems like the way they're marketing professional sports in America now, like it's not to the hardcore fan anymore. Like the Cubs are putting a sports book on top of their
stadium. No, they've got your money.
Yeah. Like, and then like the Niners built a stadium that's like, it has all these technological updates, but like it's a pain in the ass to get to. And there's all these other stadiums. They're built at like upper middle, like people with more money than I'm ever going to have. I mean,
especially covering high school sports.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I have a primary day job that supplements my writing habits essentially.
Okay. Fair enough.
And maybe one day before I die, I'll pay off my student debt, but
I'm rooting for you.
Yeah. I'm not sure which one I'm rooting for first though, but it's just, it feels more and more like the sports here are just not like, they don't give a shit about people like me because like I don't have enough money to be in their club. But yeah, it seems like maybe I'm romanticizing too much about Europe, because maybe they're the same way. Like they want just as much money as the people over here do. But and that's where, like, getting back, maybe even wrapping up the whole thing, is like, it feels like these sports don't want me anymore. They don't care about me anymore because I'm not going to end up in the tax bracket that they want me to be in, that they can pry all my money.
Yeah. It's not that they don't want you. They just take you for granted. They figure they've got you. You're going to go regardless. You're going to watch regardless. And in some ways that's true. I don't know that it's universally true. But yeah, our mid-level, low-level season ticket, occasional ticket, whatever it is you buy, does not matter as much as the corporate suite. That you're absolutely right. And I wonder, there's a chapter about this in Fever Pitch, which my book is based off of, where he talks about when soccer in England first started being on television, which is still a really recent development compared to America.
And I had no idea that a lot of the fans could not watch their own team.
Couldn't watch anything, really. Yeah. So he was talking about how, you know, the executives, the TV executives, you know, are creeping in and they're catering to these people. And it's all based on the root of what he and his friends and his fellow fans provided, that atmosphere, that feeling, that full stadium. And if they keep not catering to them, we're going to go away and then they'll notice we're gone. And I sort of feel like that's where American sports are getting to, that they haven't catered to us. They have, you know, they don't plan on it, but they'll notice when we're gone. When we have enough. So I feel like there's still a modicum of pawing at doing things that we might care about. It's not much. You kind of have to look for it. But yeah, I mean, I'm right there with you. Again, that's the corporatization. That's, you know, that's the real fear, that they keep, they keep chasing people who are in a much higher tax bracket, yet somehow pay less in taxes than we do. I don't know how that works. But they do keep, you know, the seats behind home plate at Wrigley. I don't know what the equivalent is at Comiskey. I don't think they've been as aggressive, but the suites at the United Center, you know, these are the people that really matter to them. That's where the real money is. That's who they cater to. That's what they're really worried about. Yeah, I worry about that. And I feel like, you know, soccer is different. It's one of the things that brings me back. I mean, they have this problem too, but on a smaller scale, because it, you know, we saw with the Super League, like the supporters in soccer, even if they're not on the board, they still have a voice.
Yeah.
They can still force changes at their clubs. I don't know how much longer that lasts, maybe not too much, but it's still there. And so they, you know, teams can't get away with ignoring them completely the way they can here. And maybe that, you know, you can get into the nuts and bolts of it. TV deals are structured differently, the way they share income, you know, whatever. I don't know all those details. But yeah, it does feel like on these shores, we have less and less of a voice and we matter less and less. And, but you know, these TV deals, these monster TV deals that flood the leagues with money, these sponsorships, they're still based on something. They're still based on the idea that we're watching, we're going. And if that changes, those TV deals change, and then they'd have to come back to us. So I think there's at least some bottom level awareness of that, but I could be saying that more out of hope than knowledge.
Right. Well, I know you talked about going, well, we went to the Broncos game a couple years ago, or the Bears game in Denver, and that was by far the most we've ever had to pay for tickets. I think that's probably partially to do with the Broncos being popular because they won two Super Bowls in the 90s.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're the team in Denver. I mean, they're still the main draw there.
Yeah, and there's, as I learned being out there, there's a significant amount of Chicago area transplants.
There is.
So that probably drove up the prices too. But like, we actually had two of the people in the group that came with us to Denver but didn't go to the game because they're like, we're not paying that much. Mm-hmm. And that's where, like that's, I again go back to the same thing, like they're kind of pricing out the average fan. But and the other side of that is, like, if it's a road game, like it's part of this big trip, that's cool, that's fun, it's a different story. But like, I'm probably not going to pay $200 to go see the Bears at Soldier Field if I can just watch them.
No, it's a dump. I'm with you. You know, for me, we were lucky in that my friend's family had season tickets they were willing to give us. So
it's good to know people.
Yeah, it's good to know people. It's good to have ends. But yeah, I mean, I still would have paid a lot to go just because, like, hey, I'm going to Denver. It's my first Bears game on the road in my life. Like, you know, whatever, you know, let's have an experience. But you're right. But, you know, sports aren't the only thing regular people are getting priced out of these days. So it's a societal problem.
Right. Right. And well, and that's where I feel like as I get older and kind of start to understand how things work better, it just, like, sports, this is just a reflection of society. Like, your how you do your sports is how your culture is. And the way the top, the guys at the top keep getting richer and the guys at the bottom keep getting poorer, it's happening in sports and it's happening in our society all at once.
Yeah, I mean, Jesus, you know, try and buy a house these days.
Oh, I'm right with you. I'm trying to do it right now. Can't, and it's impossible.
I mean, I'm not trying. I have friends who are trying. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
But, you know, it's a nightmare. And so, yeah, and you sort of wonder, well, where does that bubble burst? You know, when do they push it so far that no one can pay this anymore? No one can do this anymore. You wonder, but, you know, there's, you know, at least with like stuff like StubHub and the other SeatGeek or whatever, you know, there's that secondary market that does reflect actual interest. Now, Cubs tickets themselves may cost $75. You can get them right now for $11.
Oh yeah, they're They're looking like White Sox tickets, actually.
Right. They used to look like White Sox used to. So that will always be there, I think, you know. But, you know, then when teams are good, they're in the playoffs, man, you know, you and I, you know, we say, oh, I won't pay so much. I mean, we're probably going to pay so much, you know, like, because we got to be there, right?
Yeah.
You know, we got to see it. So I don't know. Yeah, it's I'd love to come on this podcast and give you answers. I can't do it. But these are all very good questions and that need watching. And I wonder too, you know, because you're right. Like, yeah, you can't. It's one thing to pay for that ticket because you're on a trip, you're out with your friends, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. We're not gonna skimp on a vacation here, but yeah, if you know, I want to go to a Bears game, I'm not gonna pay $250 to go do it on the lakefront, you know, because that sucks.
Yeah. And I get much better replays at home.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know, we keep doing this doom thing and oh, it could go worse. You know, I don't say it's every as good a chance, but it could go the other way too. Like these teams, especially in the NFL with the TV money they get and the marketing money they get.
Yeah.
You could see a day where they're like, you know what? When they start to draw a little less and home crowds aren't the same. You're seeing it in college football now, actually. Where they're just like, you know what, if we want the stadium full, we're just going to charge less because hey, we don't really need the money that bad.
Well, yeah, that's where you see, like, I've seen like business articles, like the money's in the TV deals, like, all right, but then why, right. You know, I understand supply and demand, like I know Bears tickets are a hot commodity no matter what, but I mean, at some point
right, know. I mean, we're being optimistic, these fuckers will scoop up every fucking dollar they can get. I mean, that's every right. dollar matters to them, but you're seeing it in college football now because kids don't want to. They want to be at home on their phones. They don't want the jammed internet, you know, at the game. And so even big time colleges like Alabama, whatever, you know, they have to offer like this and this and this just to get their own students into the stadium. And I feel like you could see that filter up. I'm curious, you know, how these sports books in the stadiums do, you know, people are so fucking frightened about that. And like, there have been sports books in every soccer stadium in Europe for as long as I can, you know, for decades, and it hasn't really affected that. So I'm not as scared about that as some others are, but I'm curious. You know, it's clearly something people are putting in. It's like, hey, we might need this to get people in the stadium. So we'll see. But yeah, I'm interested just as you are.
Yeah. Well, Sam, I've run out of my list of questions here. So I guess the last thing I'll ask you is it when Justin Fields retires, do you think they'll build the statue at Soldier Field or will it be in Arlington Heights?
My hunch is that it will be in Arlington. Actually, it'll be in Lake Forest, but it'll be in Arlington. I think it'll be in Arlington Heights. I think there seems to be too much smoke for them to not go. And I can't imagine what the city could even begin to think about offering to keep them here. I don't know how you refurbish Soldier Field. I think you've done everything you can with that. They're not going to build them a new one for fuck's sake. So, I think it just makes too much sense. You know what? Fine. Like whatever. I don't go to Bears games. I don't really care where they are.
Yeah. I'm sure they're still going to call them the Chicago Bears. And
right. It's still the Chicago Bears. Yeah.
I'm like you said, like we've talked about so many other things. I'm still going to watch. Like
I'm still going to watch. And there's a metro station right there. Like if I have to get out there, I can get out there pretty easily. So
a little bit of a haul from here, but
For you, it's maybe a real I'll take haul.
Maybe a 3 o'clock game. Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't want to do the 6 a.m. wake up.
Yeah. No, I've went to a Bears game recently with people who would do like the wake up at 5 a.m. get there as the gates open and tailgate open. Like that is, it was fun one time, but 5 a.m. alarms are not my friend.
Maybe, yeah, maybe one time, but not regularly. No, no, no.
All right. Well, Sam, it was an absolute pleasure to have this conversation. It was a lot of fun to cover all these topics. Like, I feel like there's a lot of monotony involved with talking about the Blackhawks and sports in general, but this, hopefully, this conversation, the ones we have the next few weeks, they're a little different. So, thanks again for joining us.
I really appreciate you asking. This was fun.
It was a pleasure. Thanks, Sam.
We'll be right back. saving money on protecting your garden. Now at Menards. Messina's Animal Stomper is a liquid repellent that prevents pesky animals from damaging your garden. Available in a convenient, ready-to-use bottle. It lasts for up to 30 days, regardless of weather and watering. Save big money on Messina's Animal Stopper at Menards. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now. Save big money.